Hello, everyone. GM. Welcome to another episode of the Solfate podcast, where we talk with builders and founders in the Solana ecosystem. How you doing, James?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing so good. Another great episode with of all people, Thorsten, in person. This is an uncommon setup for our episodes.
We don't normally have in-person episodes, but we caught up at Mountain DAO. We're just a little slow on the release here, but we caught up at Mountain DAO, and it was freaking awesome. One, it was great to meet Thorsten in person. I met him in the past, when he was working at Ironforge, and I'm an advisor for Ironforge. So we'd met briefly, but had never like chatted in depth and had never met in person. So it was super awesome to hang out with him. Super pleasant guy. And what he's building with Lucid is absolutely phenomenal.
So cool.
Basically, your local test validator on steroids. Just so much tooling built to make it a better experience, to make it more useful, help you, the developer, debug your programs, test them more effectively. Nick, you've played around with it, so you also can vouch for like how awesome this is.
Yeah, I honestly haven't played with it, but at Mountain DAO, Thorsten gave me a demo and showed me all of the coolness that it is. And I was like, oh my goodness, every Solana developer needs this. It's so good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's jump in. Check it out.
Nothing in this podcast is or should be considered financial advice. Any opinions and thoughts expressed are solely those of the individual. They do not represent the opinions of any entity. Enjoy.
This is the first time I've done this IRL, so we'll see how that goes. But thank you for being the first.
Thank you.
It's super informal. So we're here just chatting, but I am curious because I know a little bit about your background, but not a ton. I don't know anything before a year ago. So I'm curious, what's your origin story, I guess?
Origin story. Well, if you want to start way back, I was a musician for a long time.
Oh, yeah? What type of music?
I was a jazz guitarist.
Nice.
So played various gigs, taught also guitar to children and adults and things like that. And then I actually hurt my wrist at some point, I couldn't practice for a while. And that's how I got into online poker. And
right. I forgot about the online poker bit. Yes. You had mentioned that at one point.
Yes, so I got into that.
So jazz guitarist, hurt your wrist, poker.
Online poker. And then I realized that there were programs out there that would collect stats about the opponents and so on, but I didn't think they were as good as they could be. So I started writing my own, and that's how I got back into programs. So I had two bachelors. I had a computer science and a bachelor of arts, but then at that point I really started studying, and I decided on .NET. So I started learning about C# in depth and so on, and got back like that.
Wow. That's, okay, so when you went to college, you studied both computer science and music?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's those are two very different disciplines.
They are both math-based, so I'd say they have definitely a relationship.
Okay.
In college, you could replace some math credits with musical theory classes, so they allowed that. But my story was I started that computer science, and then there was this amazing guitarist that I wanted to learn from, and he happened to teach at the same university. So I started taking classes, and then I got more into, oh, you should play in the jazz band. I did that. Oh, maybe you should also learn some theory. And so I got more and more into the music as well. And then I just also did the Bachelor of Arts. Yeah.
So it just kind of happened organically because you were interested in it.
Yes, pretty much.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And do you play it all now?
I do play, but not regularly.
Not the same.
The chops are not there anymore, I would say. And I may have forgotten a lot of songs, but I can still, play along and then improvise and so on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you graduated, you went sort of fully into music then?
Yes. So actually the story was that my family was basically able to stay in the United States. I studied in Houston. And I personally was not so lucky. everyone had a green card in my family, but I didn't, because when my dad got the green card, I was considered not a son anymore because I was too old. Funny laws. And so I decided, I want to do music. So the only way to do that, how I wanted it, was to go back to Germany So I actually was a musician there for like 4 years.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. So your whole family was here in Texas?
Yes.
And then you went back to Germany.
I went back to Germany. And I was in Potsdam, close to Berlin. So there was a lot of jazz going on there. Picked up students, just did the normal thing, like played on weekends and so on, played a bunch of gigs. And then that's when I also got there. I got into the online poker and started writing that program.
That is so cool. So I want to know more about the program that you were writing for poker. So you just felt like you could get better stats,
right?
If you wrote a program yourself.
So you can basically, when you play, it writes a hand history for each game that you play to your hard drive.
Yeah.
And then you can go and analyze what happened in there. And say, for instance, an opponent raises all the time or the opponent is very conservative. So then obviously if the conservative opponent raises you, then you should take that more serious.
Yeah.
So the more data you have, the better.
For sure.
And so what I would do then is I had that data and then I put that as an overlay on top of the poker table. And then it would show right next to the opponent that you're playing against. And that's not an original idea. That was something called Poker Tracker already.
Okay.
That did that. But in my case, you could then actually click on each number and could drill in further and say, oh, when he actually does raise, how many times does he raise? 5 times or 3 times the bet, right?
Okay. So how did you just use that for yourself or did you publish that at all and make it usable elsewhere?
That's funny because I was going to make $1 million with it, but I never did. So that was my plan, right? Like,
okay.
I thought this would sell like peanuts. But what happened is I kept building it and I didn't know what an MVP was at the time, I suppose. So okay. I added support for SQLite, Postgres, MySQL, all these databases and all these things, and it never got finished. And while I was working on it and it was almost done, I went to some sort of a conference in New York because at that time I was then living in New York, and ran into some recruiter of a company called Lab49, which built like front desk trading apps. And he got really interested. And that's basically how it happened. Then I went to an interview. I had no freaking experience at all about doing real products, but they bet on me and hired me. And yeah, that's how I started in the real world.
This was trading apps?
They would build like Forex trading apps for banks.
Okay.
And so it was like a consultancy and they were heavily into .NET as well at that time and also Flex. So first thing I learned was Flash when I joined them.
Nice.
And then never used it, but yeah.
So you went straight from building your own poker product into Forex trading, not trading yourself, but building Forex trading programs for banks.
And that was super interesting, yes, because we did use WPF, Windows Presentation Framework, which very rich graphics and so on, but not very well performing if you just use it out of the box. But then these traders would want maybe 50 pricing panels ticking up and down at the same time with colors and fading colors. And they only wanted 10% CPU usage. So the interesting part there was to make it super performant. So we did things like, the numbers, we only rendered them once. And then we kind of, we took a bitmap, stored it somewhere. And we had this system of checking in and out colors and stuff like that to make it performant. So super, super, that was the part that was interesting to me, that it was very challenging.
Nice.
Yeah.
Way cool. And so then when did you learn about crypto? What's sort of your like transition from, web 2 to web 3, if you will?
Right. There's like another long part where I worked a lot with Node.js. So I got really early into Node.js. Worked for NodeSource, whose CEO was Joe McCann at the time,
who
a lot of people in Solana know
now.
And I was aware of crypto. I was aware of Bitcoin. I read a book about Bitcoin, but at that time it seemed to me that it was just to hold value and to kind of trade on value. I didn't learn about Solana until I think 2020 or so.
Okay.
And what happened?
That's still very early in Solana.
Yes, but I just like listened to podcasts and got interested and. And then some recruiter basically from Stax actually contacted me and they wanted me to maybe work for them. And that's when I started looking around, maybe there are other options. and Aslan, and actually Joe McCann again. He connected me to some people at Metaplex.
Nice.
Who were looking, and that's basically how I got in. Okay. into Solana. When I got hired, I had like 2 weeks to get started. And I literally tried to learn Solana in two weeks
with almost no resources at the time.
Exactly. And that's basically how that's a good segue to the tooling that I started building, because that was part of why I started building them.
Well, we can revisit some of that intermediary time, but let's fast forward just a little bit to the tool that you're building now, mm-hmm. which is Lucid.
Yeah.
Tell me about Lucid.
So Lucid grew out of basically that time, originally grew out of that time when I tried to understand how Solana works.
Okay.
And we could fast forward, or we could just start with Armon, which was basically the predecessor of Lucid.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If there's a logical timeline, take me through that.
So basically, I got really frustrated trying to understand how things work. So I did this tutorial about the escrow that most people start with in Solana.
Everyone but then, knows the escrow tutorials.
That's right. So when I started with it, the keys of Bob and Alice or whatever, right, they would be regenerated from scratch every time. And so when you look then in the Explorer and trying to understand what's you can't see it because it's a different pub key every time.
Yeah.
So the first thing was that I cloned the Solana Explorer, and I literally let it run in dev mode and put a JSON file there that it would read when it changed. And then literally just like wrote keys, like a key map, like Bob is this key, Alice is this key. And then in the Explorer, I changed it a little bit to show labels, to show Bob instead of some
instead of the public key.
Correct.
Okay.
And that was basically the absolute minimum version of Armon. That's how Armon got started.
This is, I didn't know that. I had no idea that you were the person behind Armon.
Yes.
Wow. I'm so glad we're having this conversation because I had no idea. Okay. So step one was basically just let's show names instead of public keys.
Yes.
What was sort of the next step?
The next step was this, that basically in the meantime, now I got hired, but started at Metaplex, and everyone went to Lisbon and my flight got canceled. So now I had a lot of time. Everyone was having fun at Breakpoint, and I basically was tasked with trying to write some integration tests for the repo that they had at the time. And that's how I started looking into this test validator, how to make that work, and learning a lot about it. And it was very difficult to set up and so on and get all the programs loaded. And that's when I said, okay, well, I can improve that. And I wrote basically just some wrapper around this where you can configure your programs that you want to load and all these things in like a JavaScript basically object that you export and that Armon then reads and correctly configures the test validator. That was then the next step of Armon.
That's the step of Armon I think most of us know. And I mm-hmm. guess for listeners, right, is like their Armon is basically used to improve local testing.
Right. It's basically, at this point, where I basically stopped working on it, it had that feature. And it also had something that I called the relay, which was basically watching account changes that happened and store all the different account states. So then you could go and not only see them in a parsed form, but you could also see that how they changed over time. And you could, you know, kind of link them back to the transactions that changed them. And another thing that I added, you could define a renderer. So you could, like I did a chess game on Solana halfway done, and you could basically see the chessboard rendered for each transaction, how it changed, things like that. So, and then I added at some point, for Metaplex, some NFT storage mock thing. Okay. So you could actually see everything local, and even the NFT would show up in your wallet connected to the local wallet. So this kind of how Armon got done, and I don't think there has been much change since then to it.
So since you left, there hasn't been a whole lot of development on Armon, it sounds like.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So what did you do next then? What was after that?
Well, I mean, that's how I kind of dove right into tooling. And we kind of can brush over this, but real quick. So I did Schenk to make also Metaplex developers, kind of more productive and be able to generate IDLs the way that people could for Anchor. And then generate a TypeScript from that with Solida, which I also did while at Metaplex. And that's
so, so this at this point, this is like 2022.
So at that point, we are basically coming up to breakpoint 2022.
Breakpoint 2022, yes. and you're neck deep in developer tooling on Solana.
Correct.
And responsible for, it sounds like, a lot of the tooling that many of us use, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. What was sort of the next step for you between between Aman and what you're working on now?
Okay, yeah. So next, I joined Ironforge because with all the ripple effect of FTX, a lot of us had some life changes. So I joined Ironforge, and there it was tasked with different things. Originally, we were thinking about writing a TypeScript. We think a way to write contracts in TypeScript and have them translated to Rust. But then we got basically pivoted into something different. And one thing that I did there was indexing accounts into Mongo, where basically you re-register a program and we watch it with Geyser. And assuming it has an IDL, on the fly, we parse the account, but then was in Rust because it had to be fast and cheap.
Yeah.
And then stuff it into Mongo. And that's kind of the tooling I did there, aside from helping with the RPC kind of load balancer metrics provider that they have now. And then I always had this idea that this is nice. This is for kind of companies and for developers to look at what's going on chain. But what's really dear to my heart is like what you're doing every day, and making you productive on your laptop and making it also not only for advanced developers, but also for people that are new to Solana, making it easy to just install an app. You have a validator running immediately. You can then maybe do some sample transactions. You can see exactly what's happening. And I had always had that in my mind. I could never really let go of it. And the moment that, I basically left Ironforge the very same day I started right on Lucid.
Started Lucid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how much of Lucid, I guess how similar was at least your first iteration to Aman, given that there are some parallels, right?
There are parallels. The main game changer here with Lucid is that it embeds a fork of the Solana validator, which allows me to do things that you normally shouldn't be able to do with the validator, but they make sense in development. With Aman, I could not, because literally it just started the process, the same validator that everyone was using, the test validator. So with Lucid, I can basically change account state without a transaction that the program owning the account would normally allow.
So you can set up an initial state for like testing, for example, that you wouldn't normally be able to set up without sending a host of transactions.
Yeah, so this one feature allows numerous things. One thing is, without having to restart the validator, you can say, okay, the validator is running, but right now I want to do a candy machine, right? But the programs are not currently my validator.
Yeah.
However, you can clone them directly from mainnet or devnet
without restarting the validator. Is running.
Exactly.
Okay. I want to pause on that for a second for the listeners who maybe aren't developers and are hearing, well, hold on, you don't want to change account state without transactions, right? We're talking in testing ground.
Correct.
Where like the, man, this is so hard for non-developers to appreciate, because like the amount of time it takes to like build your program, run your test suite, and then see that there's an issue and make a change and then build your program and run your test suite again. I don't think non-developers understand the amount of time that sometimes we just spend building and running tests. So shaving off a couple of minutes or even just 10, 15 seconds every iteration of testing is huge.
Yes.
So to be able to say, hey, we have a proper testing environment where we can actually modify things on the fly so that we can run one test given a certain state. And then between that test and the next test, we can totally change the base state and see how does our program behave in this new environment, this new situation is huge. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people are stuck typically writing sort of, writing sequential tests where they're like, I have to go through this state step by step. And that's a huge time suck. So much nicer if you can say, well, let's start from this state, just immediately set that state. So you say like, this account looks like this, this account looks like that. Let's run our program against that and see what happens. And then we can just wipe that state and change it to something totally different and start again. And not only are we just talking about like the state of accounts on your program, you're saying we can also pull in completely new programs on the fly, which is also huge because maybe your program interacts with, you know, SPL token program. And then there's another instruction that interacts with, like you said, candy machine or, you know, et cetera. And you just want to load those in while your validator is already running rather than restarting your validator and wasting time on that restart.
Right. And to be sure, right, Aman and Anchor can do that, right? Aman had a way where you find the program you want to load at Genesis, right? So the validator already starts up with this program in it. Anchor, I'm not sure if they had that at the very beginning, but now they also have that. I think it's called the cloned accounts. And obviously you can always, also if you change something, you can deploy the program, like with Anchor, into your local validator, but that's slow. Because it really does it in a way that it normally would do it. Now with Lucid, what you, for instance, can do, you get yourself into a state, right? I'm going to show this maybe later with the tic-tac-toe game. You'll get yourself into a state where you're saying, okay, I want to test that the winning move is correctly detected. So, you know, you would have to get yourself first into that state where you're about to win. Then you try it, it doesn't work, right? So then you change your program, you probably redeploy it, right? But and you try again, but maybe now the accounts are not even, now they already, the game account is already in a different state. It's not in that winning state anymore.
Yeah.
Now you have to do all the transactions again to get there. With Lucid, basically what you do is either you could just set the winning state or you get yourself to the winning state, take a snapshot of the game account. Now you try it, right? You do the transaction, it doesn't work. You reset yourself to that previous state. You're back in where you wanted to be. And you change the code in your program to fix it. It gets hot swapped right into the validator.
Yeah.
Within a second. All the other state is still there.
That's
And you immediately can run the transaction again.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Because you normally have to change your program, build it, run, start, like you would have already killed the test validator and then you run it, you know, spin it up again. It wastes so much time.
Yes. So here it gets hot swapped in. You just try it again.
Yeah.
Like even if you just want to add a message, maybe like why is this not working? You put a message, you set it back, you run it and you see immediately what's going on.
Yeah. And again, for anyone listening who's like, I don't understand why this matters. Maybe you don't care about the lives of the Solana developers who are here, but you probably do care that we get more Solana developers coming in. And a lot of people might see the state of sort of blockchain development tooling and be like, I'm not doing this because it's harder than the Web2 correlate. I can just, you know, run, NPM run test in my node projects or whatever. And like, it works and it's fast and it's quick and I can do whatever I want. And when you don't have the ability to do that with like Solana development, for example, that might be a big enough hurdle that you just quit and you may have built the next really important thing if you'd stuck around, you know? And so like, I think it, for non-developers, if you don't think you have skin in this game, but you do, anyone who wants Solana to succeed has skin in the game of like improving developer tooling.
Yes. And it's good for onboarding new people. And it's also good for building faster.
Yeah.
Like we want to, Solana is fast. Development is not, but Lucid will fix this, right?
Yes. To be fair, it is so much better today than it was even a year ago, much less 2 or 3 years ago. You know, you mentioned trying to teach yourself Solana in 2 weeks back in, you know, the early, I don't know, 2021 probably, or 2020.
21.
Where it just, there were virtually no resources at that time. You know, I didn't enter the game until January 2022. And even then the resources weren't great. But even by then we had the Solana cookbook and, you know, sort of things that were very helpful that probably weren't around when you were getting started. So that's huge. You want to show me?
Yes, I can show
you. I would love to see some of it. Okay, so let's check it out. You're gonna launch the app.
Right. comes up.
Yeah, that came up super fast.
But it has now started. We can see it ticking down here.
So it automatically kicked off the validator.
Yes. And yes, so now we go to transactions, and it's basically showing us that there are no transactions yet.
So you're jumping. I'm trying to repeat what you're saying since you don't have the mic. So you basically have these three tabs. You've got dashboard, transactions, and accounts. You jump into transactions. There's no transactions yet. You haven't done anything yet.
So which is why I'm going to go over here to the tic-tac-toe app, right? So
okay.
I'm telling you to go there to play around with this.
Got it. So you have this hooked up to a specific app.
So I literally just have a front end to the tic-tac-toe app that Anchor uses as a tutorial.
Okay.
I did not change that program at all.
Got it. So this is just the Anchor tic-tac-toe tutorial program.
Correct.
And you just built out a front end so that you can sort of submit the transactions and
correct. And also and make, demonstrate, make the moves. Right? And also this program has not been changed. Now in this app, what we see here is on the left, we have actions that you can only do with Lucid.
Yes.
And on the right, we have things that you can normally do.
Got it. So on the left is like, this is Lucid stuff. And on the right is what you normally, is just your normal instructions that you
correct.
Have available to you for the game.
Correct.
And how is the, I am curious, I want to ask here, how is this front end that you're showing tied to the Lucid app?
It basically talks to the validator with Web3.js.
Got
like
it.
Normal, right? And then there's a Lucid SDK that I created that uses gRPC calls to basically do a lot of things that you normally have to do in the UI or could do also in the UI.
Okay.
So in this case, for instance, I can just click on Fun Player, and now we saw this transaction came in super fast.
Oh yeah, that was lightning fast.
and then we can already look at some things. For instance, we can see that there was an account created that didn't exist before this transaction, and after the transaction, it does exist. So we see like the diff, like what did the transaction actually do? Because that's what, at least to me, is always important, right?
For sure. I mean, that's why we test things.
Correct.
Because we need to see what actually happened. Right.
And now we could try to create the game, but we can't because the program is not even the validator yet, right? That Anchor program.
Oh, got
it. The validator is empty when it comes. It has a token program and things that are normally in it. But
got it. Yeah. So your website here is looking at the local validator
correct.
That Lucid has running.
Great.
But you haven't actually loaded the program in yet.
Right. But we can fix that easily. I can just click here.
Clone
and then
program.
It just clones the program.
Nice.
And then if you
and
look,
so and now is that that's not actually deploying the program. That's just that's doing that sort of quick writing account state that we were talking about before.
Yes. So if you look at here, we can see that it was a transaction that involved a bunch of accounts. One is the actual program, one is the executable data of the program, and one is the IDL.
Okay.
Of the program that all get now cloned into this validator.
Got it.
And it does this with one transaction, and that would not be possible because the data would be too much. That's why Anchor Deploy takes so long, because they have to send the data 1,000 bytes at a time or something like
got
that.
Got it, but got it.
So here, since I have Lucid, I could work around that. Now, we can also look at these, right? We can see, okay, here, this is a new account. We can actually look at the data in hex form if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But now we basically set up to run this, right? And we could repeat this every time. If this was a local program, we could repeat this every time we change something.
Yeah.
And I'm currently working on the watcher, like a workspace aware watcher that just does it every time we save.
Got it.
Or compile.
So real fast, just I want to sort of say what's happening for listeners who aren't watching video, since we are showing, some of you are seeing video here, some of you are just listening to audio. Basically, what we have is we've got the app open and then separately a browser open. That's sort of the browser is where we're interacting with the specific program, right? But also that front end lets us interact with Lucid, the Lucid test validator here as well. And so we keep kind of jumping back and forth and seeing some neat things about Lucid. Now, the cool thing about Lucid to me is that it's basically has everything that I would normally be trying to do in three or four different places all in one place. I would be jumping into, you know, Solana Explorer or Solana FM to sort of look at these transactions if I wanted to see them laid out in a certain way. But you've got it all here in Lucid so that it's just really easy to inspect everything. Right.
And like, for instance, for a Solana Explorer, it doesn't make sense to show a list of all transactions that happened.
Yeah.
Because there would be way too many. But since we are working locally, it's only our transactions. So it makes sense to actually have a list of the transactions.
Yes. Right?
You can see.
Yes.
And you can also see that they get labeled. So for instance, the first transaction here that we did is called Fund Player One.
Oh yeah. Where are you getting that label?
Well, the app can say, okay, here's my signature. I know what I just did. I want to label that so in the Explorer and the Lucid Explorer, it shows up labeled. So you know what's
what. Is that something I, the developer, need to create a mapping for?
At this point, you would label the transaction. You would also have to label the accounts. I'm working also on deriving these account labels from the IDL.
Got it.
I have been working on this for 1.5 months roughly, so yeah. I'm still adding features as we go. Yes.
Well, no need to apologize. It looks amazing already.
Thank you. So now the other thing we can do is we can now create the game. Again, this is something that you could normally do if the program was already there. This is nothing magic, right? We can now go ahead and we just created the tic-tac-toe game.
Yeah, right? And that's just the regular instruction that you would normally run on the tic-tac-toe program.
Yeah. Before we jump there, maybe I should show you quick the magic that happened here. We can see that this transaction that cloned the program is actually using this Lucid 11111 in there. Uh-huh. That's basically how that works under the hood. I basically took the liberty of adding another system program into that validator. And that way
so
I can do magic.
You have a Lucid system program that obviously doesn't exist on DevNet or mainnet, mm-hmm. but exists on your validator that allows you to do
magic things.
Just about anything.
Pretty much, yes. So now we created the game, right? And now we can start playing. And we can see here that for the listeners, we are just clicking around on this tic-tac-toe and we're putting X's and O's.
And it's now, submitting those transactions right away. I'm seeing them populate in Lucid.
In no time.
So I can see what's happening.
There's a Geyser plugin running that immediately once the transaction comes in, just puts it there. And again, at this point, Lucid is communicating with the validator in memory, so it's super fast.
Yeah.
Now, if I go here and I click on one of those, so what I'm doing is I'm clicking on one of the transactions on the left in the list, and then I'm choosing the second from the top accounts. And there's nothing really that's changed in this account when it comes to LAMP ports or data size, but we can actually inspect the account data as well, which I'm doing now. And now we jump immediately to the parsed version of this. And it's showing the account div on the top and the account data on the bottom. And the account div on the top has before and after transaction, and it shows us only the fields in that account that changed.
Yeah.
So we can immediately see that the turn went from 4 to 5, and on the board 2.1, we went and added an O in this case.
Nice.
So we're only focusing on what actually changed. But if you wanted more details, we can go to the bottom as well.
So you can still see all the fields.
Yes.
But the diff only shows what changed.
Exactly.
Which is what a diff does.
So. What you would normally care for, right?
Yes.
And since in this case we had the IDL, this program, it shows it in a parsed way, right? In the bottom, basically JSON. If we didn't have the IDL, I would show it like this in the raw way. And I'm basically just now switched over and it's showing a bunch of hex numbers.
Yeah. Which is the bane of
but
our
still
existence.
Highlighting the changes.
Oh, that,
which,
that's
which
interesting.
Is interesting for people that may want to understand how programs work that don't have an IDL, but actually which offset maybe this field live in that I'm yes.
So. That's fascinating for reverse engineering,
mm-hmm.
like a program. Ooh, that's interesting. That'll be fun for some people out there who are interested in that kind of thing.
Okay. So that's pretty cool, but we didn't do much yet that only Lucid could. What about if you wanted to undo the last action, but the program doesn't even allow it, right?
Ooh, okay.
So we can click that and it just removed the last move.
So you have just an undo and that'll just undo the last transaction? Is that what that
all that's
doing?
Basically how this works is in this game, every time you make a move, you tell Lucid, take a snapshot of this account, which is a game account. And then you tell it the group, like you name it, whatever, the tic-tac-toe game. And we can actually look at those here. And I'm going to accounts and the manage tab. And there's first it shows me all the development accounts I could snapshot and I can look into. But I can also go to snapshots and then there are all the snapshots that have been stored. And these snapshots persist even across Lucid restarts.
And so, this each of these snapshots corresponds to account state after every transaction or after every instruction?
So basically in this case, you can take a snapshot whenever you want on whichever account you want. In this case, we can see that it took a snapshot of two accounts, right? and we can actually look into the tool what's in it. And what happened here, the game says, before making the move, I just want to take a snapshot of the game account.
Okay.
And then I make the move. And if I want to undo that move, all I have to do is restore that snapshot I just took.
Got it.
And if I want to go further back, you know, since there's timestamps, it can basically go back and back until you are where you want it to be.
This is so cool. How much of this, so we're obviously, we're looking at a UI. Mm-hmm. How much of this can you interact with programmatically? For example, if you wanted to, you know, if you had a test suite where you wanted to take a snapshot from, you know, of various states and then restore that state, you know, before test, that kind of thing.
Everything we just did.
Everything because we just did.
This app is deployed
yep.
on the web. It basically just connects
yeah.
with gRPC calls to Lucid. So awesome. The SDK allows you to do all these things we just showed.
Awesome.
In test. So you could, the one interesting aspect would be, you know, given I'm in this state, you set the state. If I do this, then this should happen. Okay,
yeah.
You do it, you reset the state. Or if I do this, that should happen. You don't have to always get yourself back to the state.
Yeah.
Either you could do it with a snapshot, or what I can show now, we can also just overwrite the state altogether and do this. I just clicked set winning state, and now it puts me in the winning state.
Yep. And so now you can test various actions given that you're in a winning state.
Correct. And so now basically I could try this transaction that makes me win. That should make the, you know, the program should now detect that this player won, right? And if I do that now, the player won, but maybe it didn't work. I can go back to the winning state again. Or I could run multiple tests, right? Another way where this is interesting is if I wanted to look for regressions with DefNet versus Mainnet, I could, in this case, overwrite the state of the program as well. So basically, I run a test and I wanted to make sure that in DevNet, it detects the winning state, but also the program deployed in Mainnet. So what I can do, I can put myself in the winning state, clone the program from DevNet, run the test, it works. I do the same thing again, put myself in the winning state, clone from Mainnet, make sure it also worked there. So you can even compare things like that. So just the fact that you can overwrite state.
That's interesting. Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought of that, mm-hmm. that you can, you basically say, I've got this local version, but then there's also deployed versions that I can copy as is so that you can try to tease out where a problem was introduced. If there's now a problem that,
yes.
you know, like you said, a regression that wasn't there before. That's, oh man. Yeah. This is really neat. This is really cool stuff. I do have one question, and it's not meant to doubt you, but it is sort of, I think, natural to have concerns about tweaking the validator too much, because obviously we want our tests to be representative of production as much as possible.
Yes.
So I'm curious, the magic that you're working here with changing account state, how much does that make your validator different from, you know, what exists on mainnet? How representative of reality, I guess, like is this?
Pretty much at this point, not at all. The only real, you could call it a hack here, is that mm-hmm. I added that other system program that makes these things possible. I had to fix something inside the validator with regards to being able to restart this validator without having to restart the entire app. Mm-hmm. That didn't previously work, but that doesn't change the behavior. So all the other programs, all the other things they normally do behave exactly the same way. It's just when you literally say Lucid, I want you to do some magic.
Yeah.
That's when it's different. And obviously, you know, if you do that in your tests, then you shouldn't expect, like you shouldn't use this to perform actions that you actually want programs to perform, right? Like you should only use this to put yourself into a certain state that you want to be in. And also related to that, Aman has this already, Lucid will have this as well. There are certain feature flags that you can specify for the validator, and they differ in mainnet. The validator has different feature flags than in DevNet, for instance. So with Lucid, you will be able to say, I want the validator to behave as if it was in mainnet or as if it was in DevNet. And yes, this is a really good point, though. Obviously, we don't want to change the behavior of the programs you're testing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it works in your local validator, but doesn't work on mainnet at all. No, this is only to provide you a way to to prepare state. It's kind of like as if you're thinking like you're doing testing and you prepare your database.
For sure.
And you put something in rows in the tables already, and then you run your tests. Obviously, you know that in production, no one can go and put stuff into the tables.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. So obviously, when you have like a test validator, obviously isn't going to simulate perfectly, simulate the network perfectly. And this is not about Lucid. This is just generally about test validators, because there isn't actually multiple nodes trying to reach consensus. So there's obviously issues that could arise in production that would never arise in a test validator. Do you have plans to simulate things like that? Simulating a transaction, you know, not going through because, you know, I guess that's the same as state. I was going to say state's different and it doesn't, you know, balances don't resolve or something. But I guess you already do that with just setting the state before you submit the transaction.
So at this point, it's literally made to test that your program code itself works, the Rust code.
Yeah, and we're also not worried about anything else.
Right, but then also make sure that the SDK that you provide on top of it works, and that your apps, that you maybe your D apps, it might even be you're building a D app, you don't even build the smart contract, but you want to make sure that the app works currently.
Yeah.
You could even, at this point, with Lucid, easily just say, put it into a state where there's already a candy machine. I want to work on a minting site. I don't want to figure out how to do the candy machine, how to put it there. And there are ideas that I had where Metaplex maybe could provide something, some sort of a bundle, where they have the programs that you need and they have maybe some accounts already set up, and then you are good to go and you can build the minting site, things like that.
Yeah.
That's what it's mainly made for. But basically, yes, kind of latency and maybe, maybe that a transaction doesn't get confirmed in time, or there's like a delay or something like that. That's not necessarily what it's for at the moment.
Okay.
But there's no reason why, if that people want to kind of test retry logic, things like that, why Lucid couldn't be put in, and you can say, okay, for the next test, time out the transactions on purpose or simulate that the validator is slow. There's no reason why this can't be done.
Yeah. Cool. Now that I've seen it and it's amazing, what are your future plans for? This is kind of a two-parter. I apologize in advance. It's what are your future plans from a development standpoint? What are features you're trying to add, et cetera? But then also, what's the business model here? How is this gonna be funded? And how are we going to know that development on this will continue?
Right. So maybe I'll start with the business model first.
Okay.
And then do the other one.
Yeah.
Because it kind of relates. So when I saw Lucid, I just wanted it to be there. And it's kind of a, you could say, idealistic approach. I knew people need this. I would want this. It has to be there. I'm going to build this. And then I'm going to figure out how to monetize or how to sustain it, right? And I did a kind of investigate a little bit how it could be some sort of a freemium model. But development tools are really hard to monetize.
Yes.
So most ideas that I kind of had around this, there are definitely ideas. For instance, you could say, I make it really easy to deploy programs, and it's free to DevNet, but you have to have a subscription if you want to deploy to mainnet, things like that. Those are easy to do, but other things that people ask for most times require a lot of infrastructure. Like they say, okay, what if I want to replicate the state of mainnet at this point in time when a transaction did something malicious? I want to understand what happened. Now you have to go and basically track mainnet, because it's retroactive, right? You have to figure out what was it at that point in time. So,
yeah.
Right. And no one can give that to you. So you have to basically do that. So I then explored also other approaches. I asked Solana Foundation for funding with grants. And we are looking really good on that end.
Good.
So I think they will be helping out. And but to really sustain it, I suppose I got lucky that Magic Block, which is a gaming platform for Solana, they needed something like this.
Okay.
Because they want a very fast validator. I can talk about this in detail maybe in a second. And they also want development tooling on top of that validator. So we decided to join forces. And this is a way that I can sustain Lucid development, also with the help of the grants, and make it a product for, what's the word here? Product for good.
A public good.
Public good.
Yeah.
So I make it fully public good and not worry about how to make money at some point with it. It's just going to be free for everyone and useful for everyone. And that also leads into the previous question that you had about what's next for Lucid, right? So Magic Block, they want to have a validator that spins up for games where you need fast transactions, faster than Solana can currently do. So imagine you are on a map and you enter a cave. Like while you're on the map moving around, Solana transactions are fine.
Okay.
Fast enough. When you enter the cave, you might want to fight somebody and run around. And there you need like very, very fast transactions. So the idea is when you go into the cave, an ephemeral rollup spins up, which is a separate validator node.
Oh.
And in that validator, you can go as fast as you want. And the transactions are recorded, and then they are at some point combined, or you could say rolled up, and then basically committed to Solana. So we're still using Solana for all the state. It's just for the really quick volatile state changes, we'd be using that validator.
And these changes that you're talking about, these are changes that don't impact other accounts on Solana. They're correct. Sort of specific to your public key as the end user who's going right through the game, which is what makes it possible to say, well, let's do this and do this faster and then roll it up later, because there's no potential, there's no risk of like settlement problems between you and another person on Solana, because we're now sort of we're creating this separate thing that relates only to your character,
right?
You and your character.
Correct. So how this basically works is at the moment of you entering the states, the cave, these accounts get rolled up. Delegated. So they basically get locked on the main chain on Solana, and they're now delegated to that ephemeral rollup validator.
Yeah.
And now they basically get modified in there. And then the final state will be committed back to Solana, and then it will be unlocked again.
That is fascinating. That is a fascinating use case, both for your validator and for rollups in general.
Right.
You know.
So it's an ephemeral rollup.
I love that term actually, because we're not talking a long-standing layer two. Right. We're talking for the duration of your character playing inside of this particular map, maybe a couple minutes or whatever, and then we get some kind of cryptographic hash proof of what happened during that time frame, and then write that to chain.
Right. So it spins up on demand. It rolls down. It goes down on demand, and it's basically just to accelerate for that moment in time when you need acceleration for your transactions. It's not a side chain or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's literally just to speed up these transactions that you need sped up, and then commit it back to the chain. That's what the idea is. And there, obviously, then the opportunity here is that I can write a validator that makes that possible, that is super fast, and that is also more lean. It doesn't need all these things that you don't need for this case.
Yeah.
And it turns out that for a local test validator, you don't need those either.
Yeah.
So that's where these goals are perfectly aligned. And then, obviously, Magic Block also wants their developers to have good tooling when they write these games. And so they're working really hard on, Gabriella is working really hard on an API that makes it super easy based on the entity component system. And it makes it easy, really easy to work with this. You don't have to understand all about Solana to do this. But also the tooling to see what's going on in with the accounts, with the transaction, needs to be good. And that's where Lucid comes in. But then everything I add there also is useful to Solana community in general.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is way cool. Oh man, we're gonna have to get back on and talk with Magic Block. I know we had talked the other week about maybe all of us chatting. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the connection, but now I do. And now that we're talking about it, it's like, okay, we might have to get back on and and talk with you and the two Magic Block co-founders.
Yes.
And all of us chat, because this is fascinating. I'm interested to hear how you know the three of you are thinking about this sort of ephemeral roll up, if you will, ephemeral validator situation. That's really neat. It's something that I've not considered before.
It's super exciting, super interesting, and we'll bring a whole new way of using Solana to the ecosystem. Right?
Yeah.
Before you couldn't do these kind of things on Solana. Now you can, right? With this, once we built it.
That is awesome. Well, let's see. Before we wrap, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners? Anything about Lucid, you know, public release dates, those kinds of things?
Right. So, yeah, obviously I will add a lot of more features to it. This will include configuration per workspace where, you know, every time you launch it from your project, it will already be configured, things like that. Anything that makes it super easy to get started, to be productive, to have more investigation features like account labels. We already talked about this. What I'm planning to now is I'm planning to add the workspace support, which is basically allowing you to just compile the program and immediately everything's updated in the validator, so you can watch your workspace.
Nice.
Once I have that, I will, for now, do the final release. And I'm probably going to roll this out. So if you want to get those releases, you should go to lucid.app. So it's with a Z because it comes from loose, like because the soul is the sun, loose is a light. So lucid with a Z, .app. And there's an email list you can sign up for.
Awesome.
And then you get that, the link to that release. After I release it, there's still some pain points because I'm just releasing this as a .app file. I didn't sign this, so the Apple will probably scream at you when you try to install this. But
yes,
if you work yourself through those hurdles, then you have Lucid. After I did that release, then I will focus on getting that validator done. To a point where Lucid can use it.
Cool.
And which might take about 2 months or a little more.
Yeah.
And then the next releases will start coming out. So I want to first have that validator, have Lucid be based on that validator. Separate also the server and the client to make installation easier, because then the UI part, which is the app, will just connect to a thing you run in your CLI, which makes it much easier to convince your Mac that this is okay.
Yeah.
Lucid, by the way, also works on Linux. When the server and client are separated, then you could run the server part in WSL in Windows and still have the UI as well. So then it would also work on Windows.
Nice.
So those are the short-term, well, somewhat short-term goals. We're talking 2 months. And then I will just keep adding features piece by piece.
Love it. Okay. Well, awesome. To the listeners, go to lucid.app. We'll put all this information in our show notes, by the way, so there'll be actual links people can click on. They don't have to remember the spelling necessarily, but it is Lucid with a Z. This is super awesome. If you're a developer, definitely go check it out. Thorsten, thank you so much
for
this conversation. This is awesome. I'm very excited about Lucid.
I was happy to be here and have the chance to talk about it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Listeners, we'll see you guys next time.